right now how Starbucks changed his life. 10 years ago, Michael Gates Gill was a high-flying executive at a top ad agency in New York with a six-figure salary, big house in the suburbs, wife, and four kids. But in 1997, that all changed dramatically. Michael Gill was fired from his job, replaced by someone younger. His wife divorced him when she learned the woman he'd been having an affair with was pregnant, and he was diagnosed with a brain tumor. Into this dark nightmare entered the most unlikely of rescuers, Starbucks. Mike Gill, as he now likes to be called, became a barista at the ubiquitous coffee chain, an experience that he says rescued him from the depths of despair. He writes about it in his book, How Starbucks Saved My Life, A Son of Privilege Learns to Live Like Everyone Else. And before we get to this story, we also want to hear yours. Have you ever had a job that changed your life, for better or for worse? Did quitting or getting fired from a job transform your life in a way you never expected? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And Mike Gill joins us now from our bureau in Chicago, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Anthony.
Great to have you. And your book was a lot of fun to read, I must say. First of all, give us a sense of what it was like when you were fired from your high-profile job as an ad executive. Did this just come out of the blue?
It shouldn't have come out of the blue, but I was still shocked and hurt by it because, you know, I'd made that mistake of growing old in advertising, and I should have known that that's sort of an unforgivable thing to do. And also it would hurt because I was fired by a young woman I'd sort of helped bring along. And I told her once that I said, you really have to be perceived as sort of even tougher than any man. You have to be, you know, just that kind of macho toughness to really move up in advertising. And unfortunately, I think she proved her mettle that day when she invited me to breakfast and fired me. But it did hurt, even though, you know, you sort of understand in the back of your mind that these things can happen. When they happen to you, it's still a great shock.
Yeah, that scene in the book, it's one that it's sort of scary. This is the person you brought along, and she took you out for breakfast, and she was pretty tough the way she gave you your walking papers.
Yes, I think, there's no easy way to do it. And I don't blame her, because I think it's just the nature of the advertising business, maybe some other businesses in America, where as you move up, you become, you know, regarded as overhead. And then when you're too old, and too old being that most advertisers, most clients are looking for that young demographic, that it's sort of someone's going to do it to you. But it hurt me especially because of that. You're right, Anthony.
So you write that you suddenly realized that this was the reality for millions of Americans,
yes.
But millions of elderly Americans, correct?
Yes. You know, I still felt signaled out, and it was very hard. But, you know, the interesting thing was it's almost like the mafia. You're not allowed to object to it, because as part of the breakfast, you know, she said she would help me build a consulting business, and, you know, JWT would refer clients and things like that. So, you know, in the very act of being, in a sense, professionally killed, right, there's also the agreement that you're not going to say a word against anybody.
Or else they'll really torpedo your chances of taking the next step.
Right. So I went off, and it was really hard for me, even actually on an emotional level, to admit to family and friends even that I'd actually been fired by this company that I'd really loved and spent, you know, 25 years feeling this loyalty to, you know, because maybe I was inventing it in my mind, but it really felt that I devoted a large part of my life to J. Wardell Thompson, and to be fired in that way at that time when I was most vulnerable, because I built the, you know, first couple of years in the consulting business was great, but then my friends themselves, you know, who would be giving me business, went off to play golf or something, and it was very, very lonely when you know, trying to ring up people to get business and there's no answer on the other end of the phone.
So your attempt to set up a sort of private consulting firm failed. You
yes.
ended up at Starbucks. Tell us quickly
yes.
how you got there. How does a guy go from, you know, six-figure salary
right.
and high-paced ad world of New
right.
York to Starbucks?
Well, you know, I spent more and more time in New York in the Starbucks stores, drinking the lattes. I still dressed up in a fancy suit and necktie, but, you know, I would make my calls and pretend like I was actually still in business. And one day, by accident, oh, by the way, a couple weeks before, I'd also been diagnosed with a brain tumor. And the doctor said the scary thing, that most people survived the operation. And I had no health insurance. In any case, that particular day, I'd gone back to my sort of neighborhood home because there were happy memories there. And I walked into a Starbucks store and ordered my latte and happened to sit down next to a young woman. And in that store, purely by accident, they happened to be having a hiring event. And she turned to me. And even though I heard later she thought maybe I was a guest, maybe I wasn't there for the job, she said, "Would you like a job?" And suddenly, Anthony, that broke through this sort of cocoon of depression and pity, self-pity that I'd been in. I said, yes, I would like a job.
Hmm.
But even more remarkable, I had never had to fill out I was, you know, born in an affluent situation. I'd been given an education because at Yale in those days, you could get in if your family had gone there. And a friend of mine from Yale had given me my job at J. Walter Thompson. So I'd been given it. I never had to fill out a job application. And so I moved over to a table and we looked at each other face to face. And she helped me go through it. Like she said, you know, "Have you had any retail experience?" And I said, "Well, what's retail?" She said, "You know, Walmart." I said, "Walmart? I've never been in a Walmart." But then she helped me. She said, well, think of something that, you know, you sell. I said, "Well, I worked in marketing with Burger King." She said, "Burger King, that works, you know."
That works, sure.
So she was a young woman who I never would have considered even working with her, let alone having a job interview with, right? And somehow she intuited that I needed this help. And instead of just dismissing me because I was from such a strange and different background than she was, she actually not only offered me a job, she helped me get the job.
Well, we've got a lot of callers already dying to get in on this conversation. I want to talk to you about how it worked out for you at Starbucks.
Yes.
And you made some surprising discoveries there. Listeners can call 1-800-989-8255 or send us an email at talk@npr.org. Tell us your stories. Have you ever had a job that changed your life for better or for worse? Did quitting or getting fired from a job transform your life in any way? Let's go to Rick, who's calling from San Antonio. Hi, Rick, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I was a kid, dropped out of high school, I was 18 years old, and my girlfriend had broken up with me and left, and I was working in a factory and almost had enough time to get in the union. I had 38 days, needed 50.
Hmm.
But I guess they saw I was kind of a smart ass or something like that, and they you know, got rid of me before I got union protection.
So they fired you. They fired you.
They fired me. Hmm. And the guy who I'd worked with at the factory had sailed in the Merchant Marine, and he showed me how to get my seaman's papers and get on and sail with the Merchant Marines. And this is back during Vietnam, you know, so I got to I marched in protest against the war, but as a Merchant Marine, I had to go over there to deliver war material, but at least I didn't have to fight.
Hmm. But, so are you still working in the Merchant Marines?
No, it's that industry's pretty much dried up for us, but still, I got to get around and see the world, go around the world a few times when my, you know, late teens, early 20s, and it helped me a lot in everything I've done since then.
So another story about being fired and things working out well.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't think it was going to work out too good, but it did.
All right. Well, Rick, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
So, Mike Gill, getting back to your story. So you take this job at Starbucks almost out of desperation, but then something surprising happens. You discover that you're actually happy with this kind of work.
Yes, actually, it started the first day because, you know, as soon as I walked in the door, and I was obviously feeling uneasy, and this young lady, Crystal, came over to me and sat me down at a table, gave me this most delicious coffee I'd ever had, and then a delicious espresso brownie. And I've always loved brownies and loved coffee. And suddenly I felt I was in this new world. I mean, and she said, "By the way, you're getting paid for this," as we were talking and enjoying. She told me about the coffee and the brownies. And I said, "Wow, this ain't bad," you know. And then as I got to work on the, you know, cross over the espresso bar and on the other side, I really enjoyed working with these young partners that were, you know, they were so much better than I had ever been, every different background, every different education. And I felt that finally I'd moved into a whole different world. Instead of just being with people just like myself, I'd sort of gotten out of that into a whole world of various and different and interesting people. And it was so rejuvenating for me.
Hmm. Yeah, you talk about this young supervisor who hired you, Crystal.
Yeah.
You already mentioned her. She was young. She was black.
Yeah.
Tell us about her. I mean, this was a bit of an education for you, correct?
Yes, because, you know, first of all, I would have never considered even serving coffee to anyone who worked for me, right, before in my previous, when I was a boss. And here she was serving me. And then I discovered that was part of almost a culture of courtesy that they have. I'd worked with a lot of Fortune 500 companies, and they always say we put our customers first. And I discovered at Starbucks, they really put what they call their partners first. I mean, you get stock, you get healthcare. She told me all my children would be covered with the health insurance. And I was just a part-time employee, you know, Anthony. This was sort of when I was a senior executive, I didn't get the level of health insurance, and also the level of training, and basically also respect. Like, even if someone spilled some coffee or something, she said, "Mike, would you do me a favor? Would you, clean up the spill rather than do it?" And the whole atmosphere was a very nurturing and uplifting atmosphere, completely different than anything I'd ever imagined.
We're talking to Mike Gill about his book, How Starbucks Saved My Life, A Son of Privilege Learns to Live Like Everyone Else. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Okay, let's take another call, get someone else involved in this conversation. Let's go to Catherine, who's calling from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Well, my story is that I had a job that I really hated, but it was a very good job, and I made good money. I worked a lot of hours, but I was miserable. And
can I ask what the job was?
I'm sorry?
What was the job?
Well, I was managing a TV station.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't enjoy the job. It was a lot of pressure, and it was pretty much consuming my life. And so then when I got fired, I was pretty miserable for a while. But then I realized I had time to think about who I was and what I wanted to do. And I actually had time to figure out that part of the reason I was miserable was because I was living a lie, and I was actually a lesbian, and it allowed me the opportunity to spend time with myself and to think about who I was and what I wanted to do, and I was able to come out to myself.
Wow, so it was a real journey of self-discovery, it sounds like.
It sort of gave me the boost to get on with my life, right?
All right, Catherine. Well, thanks so much for the call.
Yeah, I think, yeah, by the way, Anthony, Catherine's call, that reminds me that this has been a gift to me of my life back, in the sense that a part-time job, before my job was, 12-hour days and flying 100,000 miles around the country, that kind of thing. And you, even when you weren't working, you were thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a part-time job in this kind of environment where you're serving a great cup of coffee, but there's interchange and enjoyment. But when you walk out the door at the end of a shift, your life is your own. Like I say, I start at 5 a.m., but I'm most always over by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then the entire rest of the day and evening is mine. And I think that gives you the time to actually begin to think more about life and less about work.
So it sounds like you're saying you didn't have homework to bring home in a way.
That's a perfect way of saying it, which is, I think most of us get into these jobs where we've always, even when we're, say with our kids or something, we're not really there, because we're thinking, oh, how about tomorrow in this situation, politically or whatever. And, I could read a book. I could listen to music. In fact, it turned out I could write a book, but mm-hmm. I never would have been able to do any of those things if I'd been in my previous life where, the job was taken so seriously. I think in America, we have this kind of feeling that we have to define ourselves through our work rather than through our life.
Let's go to Steve, who's calling from Waterford, Michigan. Hi, Steve.
Hi, it's Steph, actually.
Oh, sorry, Steph.
Yeah, I'm a single mom, and I worked for 10 years at EDS. And the last four of my 10 years, it was every day could be your last day. And I couldn't take the pressure, and I actually asked a different manager to let me go, not my own, because I still wanted a severance package.
Mm-hmm.
But after 10 years of just that burden, but yet I had to work. I had to be responsible because I had a son I have to raise. And
so what are you doing now, Steph?
So now it took about 6 months, but I got into the pharmaceuticals, and I'm a farm rep for the last 2 years. And it's liberating to know. I mean, at first I was stuck in a job that I enjoyed the job, but I couldn't take the pressure because every day could be your last day with the market in Michigan. But it's so liberating to know that you don't have to stay at a job for 10 years that you're miserable at. Do something else.
That's a great message, Steph.
It was a blessing to me.
Well, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Michael Gill, you're bringing out a lot of healthy messages from the callers, I would say. The idea that you don't have to stay with something that's making you miserable.
Yeah, I think that's actually, if there was any, by the way, I'm not a guru about any of this stuff. It, you know, I messed up and I'm struggling back. But I think if there's any idea that when in thinking about it, what, you know, the one thing I did right, and I did it out of desperation, not courage, is that you should never allow yourself to get caught in a box like that or get stuck in some unhappy situation. And it's almost better just to leap to a wholly new life or new world rather than sort of jog along in a stuck situation. I think it's sort of like in America we say, look before you leap. I think sometimes you should just leap, if, you know, rather than try to figure everything out.
Well, Mike Gill, now you're on a book tour. I've read that you've sold the movie rights to this story.
Yes.
I understand Tom Hanks is involved in the project. It sounds like if you're not careful, you're going to get rich again, maybe even famous.
Hey, Anthony, I think, you know, someone suggested that you're absolutely right, because there is a danger there. You know, by the way, I would still be waiting. I'm not going to give up my day job, you know. But, you know, actually, Gus Van Sant, who's going to direct the film, called me and he said that the thing that appealed to him and Tom, you know, by the way, I use their first names. I've never met them and I don't know them. But it was the idea of a life after a life, even though, you know, obviously they've lived very successful lives. But the idea you could go into this whole new life that you never imagined, and the surprise is you're happier than you've ever been, because that's the way I feel today. And I think, once again, that lesson is I was stuck and I was more and more unhappy and I didn't know how to get out of it.
Hmm.
Thank goodness, through desperation, I made that leap. But I would recommend to anyone like listening to your program is that they don't wait so long, that they say, okay, I'm just going to leap into some totally new situation because it might make me happier than I've ever been.
And you don't have to necessarily be a young person to do that.
Right.
Right, because you're 67 now?
Yep, 67.
So it's never too late to take the leap.
Any age.
Well, Mike Gill, thanks so much for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Anthony.
That's Mike Gill, author of How Starbucks Saved My Life, A Son of Privilege Learns to Live Like Everyone Else. He joined us from our bureau in Chicago. You can read an excerpt of his book at our website, npr.org/talkofthenation. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Anthony Brooks.